What's up, bad boys? Thanks for clicking on this podcast today. This month, we got a very special treat for you. It's Mecha March, and we're going to be running down a different mech anime every week this month. That's four animes, and that's four chances to talk about big, bulbous, cool, giant robots. Isn't that fun? So sit back, relax, get in that goddamn robot, Shinji, and have a nice Mecha March.
It's bad. Anime. Bruh.
Hello, everybody. My name is John.
And I'm Rob.
And this is Bad Anime, the show where we decide, is this anime bad? And very much so, going in with our Mecha March theme.
I mean, we have to start with this.
What else
can you start with?
What else can you do?
Well, we should also really hammer home what we're talking about, because this particular version of the story is a very interesting footnote in anime history.
Yes, and I'd love to hear about it because this is for the first Gundam 1.
Yes.
But this is the film version that's been published on Netflix.
Exactly. So this film is a if you go on Netflix right now, you'll see Mobile Suit Gundam 1, 2 and 3. What this film is, it's a edit of the whole film series. It's three films. It's an edit of the first season of Gundam, Mobile Suit Gundam.
Oh, so the first three films are the first season of Gundam.
Yes.
I see. Okay. I thought that each one was the first, second, and third season.
No.
They're all smushed together just the first season of Gundam.
Exactly.
Ooh,
so
okay.
The original Gundam was 43 episodes.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Okay.
Funny
that
enough,
makes a lot more sense.
It was 43. It was supposed to be longer, but the ratings were actually pretty low when it originally aired.
Oh, wow.
So it only got 43 episodes. However, the Gunpla, the model kits that everyone knows and loves, the ones I collect feverishly, they started selling really well in 1980, a year after the show debuted in 79.
Okay.
So what happened was that happened, and they're like, oh, maybe we can cash in here. How do we do this? So it was actually a two birds, one stone scenario, because at the same time, Yoshiyuki Tomino, the creator, he had to include a lot of stuff in the TV series he didn't want to, or else it wouldn't have gotten funded.
Oh,
so he's like,
okay,
wait a minute, I can do this. I can capitalize on the franchise getting popular now, and I can remove a lot of elements of the show I didn't want to put in there to begin with.
Oh, okay, that's kind of smart. So then he was just able to just edit it down into these three movies.
Exactly. So now I forgot the math off the top of my head, but he shaved off hours of content, and it's really fascinating to see it kind of work. Gundam 1 here.
That's definitely something that we're going to hit on. But I want to know, even before we get into that part, I want to know from you, did you watch all 43 episodes of the first season of Gundam?
Not all 43, no.
Okay.
Started it, and I believe I'm 10-ish episodes in.
Okay.
Funny enough, I can tell you exactly where plot-wise I stopped.
Mm.
Because it actually was around like an hour and change into the film, right before the party scene and the death of Garma. It was like literally right before that I stopped.
That whole part. Okay,
yeah. I caught all that stuff, watched the full version, so that's gonna be very interesting for me to talk about, because I can actually go in depth on what was cut.
Yeah, because that's quite a lot. They did a lot of stuff leading up to that. I think only in like the last two or three episodes that they did that. I mean, not episodes, but last like maybe 20 to 30 minutes. Or like 40 minutes, maybe?
Yeah, maybe around 40 minutes, like, is right after the Garma, and they're like, oh, fuck.
Yeah, and they do that kind of, like, big assault that's, like, for Garma. But, yeah, very interesting. So I will say that this is only the first Gundam that we're talking about this month, of two Gundams.
Yes.
And when we get to the next one, I would like to make some comparisons, because there are a lot of fun comparisons here.
Oh, totally here, and there's, because that one was produced several years later. And it's going to be very fun to talk about. There's even a couple of Eva comparisons you can make as well.
Believe me, I have them written down.
Perfect. I'm so happy we're on the same page. We did good about not talking about this.
Yeah, we really did. We kind of glazed over it, but we never really dove deep in it. I'm glad we didn't for today.
Well,
so, yeah.
And also, behind the curtain, I finished the film as we were starting the recording session. I'm like, yeah, give me 1 second. And we're good.
And record.
But it's so weird for me because I know the story already. I haven't watched the full series. Because also, there's a prequel OVA series that got produced in like 2015. Or 13, maybe. Mid-2010s. A prequel OVA series got released. which I watched because it was like,
yes,
it was like six episodes, but they were each like an hour, hour and a half long. So it was a bunch of movies. And that was at, yeah, so like I said, it was called Gundam Origins. So it got, you got a little bit of Armoro in that series, but a lot of Char's backstory. So seeing it happen in real time here, I'm like, ha.
Oh, that's pretty cool. That's pretty cool.
Actually. And I was like looking for some loose ends like they didn't mention yet, but everything got, by the end of the Gundam 1, they mentioned a lot of things that are very important to Char's character.
Okay.
However, one thing they kind of glossed over, which is pretty early on, but we'll talk about that in a minute.
Cool.
So I guess we should just talk about what Gundam is, because now this is, I'm so excited for you to see this, because Gundam has a weird reputation in the West, kind of, because no one really knows what it is.
Because
when you look at the Gundams that are popular, it's mainly Gundam Wing and G-Gundam, the ones that aired on Toonami and got heavily featured. So people loved them. Those were a little atypical, especially G-Gundam. Because G-Gundam was very much a cartoony superhero show, where Gundam, at its heart, it's a war drama.
Very interesting. And that's kind of always what I thought it was. I have not ever actually, even in my Toonami days, never watched Gundam Wing or G Gundam or anything like that. Like,
because we talked about this before, because in the West, we associate giant robot media a lot subconsciously with Power Rangers, which is a kid's show. And this isn't made for a super mature audience either. The other Gundams definitely are. But it's one of those things where like, oh, it's a giant robot. How seriously can you take it? Funny enough, you watch Gundam and you're like, oh,
yeah,
they're playing this really straight.
And that's something that I was fascinated about, because I really thought this was going to be more like, you know, cartoony, I guess, in theme and kind of in the plot line. But it was actually quite deep.
Yes.
which I was very surprised about, because especially because it's the first one ever. And I'm over here thinking like, all right, they want to attract people with like the flashy robots and the really cool moves and all that stuff, and like get the kids into it so they can sell a lot of fucking toys. But no,
they just didn't do that.
It's a wartime drama about a 15-year-old struggling to kill people.
Exactly. and suffering from terrible insomnia for all the guilt he's feeling.
Yes. And he just wants to, let him go to bed.
He just wants to sleep.
And I was always crossed between two phrases that I was yelling in my mind during this movie, which is either let the boy go to bed or get in the fucking robot armor.
Get in the robot, Shinji with balls.
Shinji with red ginger Shinji. Get in
ginger
that robot.
Shinji. Shinji with seasoning.
Get in that robot. Are those freckles?
What? Oh, okay. Amuro Ray. It's like, what the fucking nationality is he supposed to be? Anyway.
I don't know. But anyways, yes. That was probably the most gripping thing about this movie, is that it was the story of Amuro, but I mean, there's a whole lot of like yelling. He yells a fuck ton because he's just a scared kid.
He's a 15-year-old kid.
He just made a mistake of getting in a robot, and then he became the only person who could operate the robot. And then they were like, well, we're in war. We can't teach anybody to operate this robot. You have to do it. You've been doing it. Why don't you just do it again? He's like,
And the thing is, because they established very early on, the first thing you see him doing is missing, because this takes place predominantly first on a space colony, which they call Sides here.
Right.
So it takes place on Side 7, where his father, Amuro's father, was actually in secret developing the Gundam for the United Earth Federation.
Right.
The, like, Earth government, who's now dealing with a pesky rebellion force because colonists said, hey, fuck you guys.
Yeah.
Like, you're not letting us be free. So as an American, I'm just like, yeah, colonies rebel.
Yeah, let's go.
So,
and it's funny how that, the colonies rebel. And I feel like they get to it towards the end of the movie a little bit about
very much so
how, you know, there's no such thing as like bad people. And it's just like two people thinking the very different things and just having to go to war for it. But yeah, I mean, that colony is Zeon, which this was
originally Side 3.
Side 3. Oh, interesting. Okay, so they are one of the sides.
Yeah, they were one of the colonies, but that's where they formed Zeon or Zion. Principality of Zeon, yes.
Yes.
Because in the actual pronunciation in the Japanese is Zeon, but it's been pretty much westernized as Zion by all of the dubs.
Oh, I see.
I'm going to go back and forth with pronunciation. Funny, I didn't know that the Netflix version only had the Japanese audio, which is really cool for me. Because I watched the dub, and the dub was done in 2001, so it was good.
Oh, wow.
Because if they tried to do it in 1979, it wouldn't have gone well.
No, it would not have.
So, and actually it was dubbed by a lot of the same people who did a lot of other Gundam projects. So it was very, the dubs were very, Gundam is a very cool history when it comes to dubbing, because pretty much all of it was brought over in the 2000s.
Yeah. Wait, that's pretty interesting, actually. So that means all the dubs were actually quite good.
Yes.
Versus bad.
What a 1980s dub would have been bad, and we've talked a lot about.
Many 1980s OVA-specific dubs.
Oh, yeah, OVAs in general, yeah.
Horrendously underperformed, but that's good to hear. But yeah, I was kind of also surprised and happy to see the Japanese audio on this, because I thought, oh, you know, it's great.
It is more authentic, because
more authentic, also like with the times. Also, it like kind of started a revolution in like the giant robot anime space. So I think it was a really one to kind of get under the feet and like watch and see what it was about, if it was more combat centric or more like mentally centric. And it was definitely more mentally centric and strategic based.
Well, that's the thing. That's a funny thing here, because this is one of the big differences from the batch of episodes that I've seen from the original Gundam versus what we get here. Mm-hmm. Because there was a lot, there was a bit more of, do you remember the three kids who were like running around on white base? You've only seen them a couple times. There was a lot more of them in the original.
Really? Okay.
Not
so
a
they
ton
cut out
more,
a lot
but noticeably. So they cut a lot of that out.
Okay.
There was a lot of gimmicky stuff for children in the original. Again, Yoshinoki Tomino did not want to include. For example, Gundam in the original was actually three robots that combined together.
Oh, okay.
He hated that.
So it was like a Megazord type deal.
Exactly. Ah. They told him, hey, combining robots really in, you have to do that. And he's like, that doesn't make any sense with the story we're telling. And they were like, well, you have to do it. And he's like, well, fuck you guys. So he did it. And that's the first thing he changed. Where he
I imagine he just like went into the cutting room and they were like, all right, so well, let's talk about what to cut. He's like, they're not Megazord.
Exactly.
We have to cut that Megazord shit.
Actually, funny enough, this predates Megazord. It predates Megazords by quite a few years.
It does.
Animes in general were leading that way, because before Gundam, mainly all, if I can be so bold, mecha anime were the superhero type, where it was like superhero robots fighting evil aliens.
Right.
Where this, it's guys who just were fighting for their own freedom.
Right.
And they do their best in the show and the movie. They kept a lot of it. Where they make both sides look like assholes.
Yeah, they really do in various ways. And like, I really enjoyed that. And I was surprised once again to see that. Considering that a lot of anime of the time, as you mentioned, were kind of like of the heroic nature.
Yes.
I was very surprised that they were like, yeah, the Federation, let's go. And they were like, oh, wait a minute. The Federation's kind of dicks.
It's like, wait, why are the ones stationed on Earth a bunch of drunken assholes abusing civilians?
Right, and making these children go off to war for them.
Yep.
That shit was, and they're just a bunch of drunks
A bunch of drunks. It was amazing.
Which is really cool.
There's a lot here that, like, even though it was made for a younger Japanese audience, it feels way more mature.
It does.
And there's some stuff that just ages pretty badly. Like, when Amuro and Frau were, like, trying to escape Side 7 when Zeon was, like, raiding. At one point, like, Frau watches her grandfather die, so Amuro thinks, all right, I'm just going to slap her out of it. So he does. He just slaps her, like, get out of here. And I'm like, okay, I wonder how many more times women will be hit in this thing. Only a couple.
This was very interesting, yes. I love that scene as well, because after he slaps her, after her grandfather dies, and he slaps her, and he's like, you have to leave. And she's like, no. And he slaps her and he's like, you have to leave. And she's like, okay. And then she runs away, but also
like
can't climb up the rocks that she's supposed to run away on.
It looks like she's concussed.
It's very funny.
It's hysterical, but at the same time, like, oh, Frau, are you okay?
You all right?
Like, girl, I'm a little worried about you. Let's you're good.
This was some, like, abuse. Like, are you okay?
I mean, yeah, but it just shows what a different time it was.
Yeah.
Where, like,
yeah,
this is okay. And also just that there being that many drunks featured, or that drinking featured that prominently in a children's show at the time, it's like, huh, that just doesn't happen in Western
media. I thought so many times that they were going to go deeper into just like absolute like female bashing in this movie, because there was one point where Amuro's friend, I'm not girlfriend, but, you know, pretty close, like
Frau, right?
Was it Frau?
Or was it a different one?
Whatever, like the main character that wasn't Amuro was, that was kind of always around him. If that was Frau?
Maybe. Was it the blonde or the brunette?
The brunette.
Yeah, that's Frau.
Okay, it was Frau. So Frau comes up to him, and Amuro is like refusing to pilot the Gundam again, because he's like, I'm tired of this. I just want to go to bed.
Yeah.
And she's like,
I haven't
Amuro,
slept in weeks.
Yes. And she's like, Amuro, don't worry, I'll pilot the Gundam. And he's like, wait, no, you can't pilot the Gundam. I thought he was going to say, you are a woman. And it seemed like that was on the tip of his tongue, honestly.
But he stopped himself, yeah.
But he did. I was like, okay.
But luckily, yeah, that was kind of counterbalanced by the fact that the leader of, not White Base, but the other ship that gives him support, yes, in the series, is a woman.
Which was nice. And he seemed to gather a lot of inspiration from her in a lot,
yes,
of ways.
She did, he did look up to her very plainly to see.
He did. He did. So that was interesting.
Yeah, yeah. So you know, in this, in like... one of the things I found very fascinating when I was reading up on this film, the word I saw, or the description I saw, was describing Yukitomino's desire to tighten the narrative, and that's what I feel like he did here. Some characters lost a bit of time. Mm-hmm. Bright, Noah,
The commander.
Right? Yeah, the commander there, lieutenant, whatever his current rank is, he changes ranks several times.
He
lost a little bit of time. He wasn't really developed in the early part of the season, but he's lost a lot of time. Mm. Frau didn't really lose any, and a lot of her scenes were just kind of incidental, usually interacting with the kids and, sure, like tending to the refugees and stuff like that.
Right.
So she lost a little development, but not a ton that was necessary. Sally, unfortunately, this is one of the biggest things. One of her biggest plot points kind of glossed over here.
Oh.
There was a lot more foreshadowing in the original version, because remember, she was on the ground when Char was like fucking around.
Right, right.
And she's like, all right, she had
yes,
a blaster to him.
That's right. Cause she was like, oh, are you, yeah, my brother?
Exactly.
And it was never addressed again, kind of.
Yes, and it was really glossed over. In the original, there was more time spent on it where she was like, wait, are you my brother? And he said it very briefly in this film, but in the original, he's like, wait, he took a little more time. He's like, wait, was that Artasia? Oh, shit. This is gonna be a problem if she was. Meanwhile, this character name is Celia. So the audience is left thinking, what the fuck are either of them talking about?
Yeah. You know, I thought there were a lot of benefits and negatives for how this was kind of paced throughout.
Yes.
And it was nice that I did watch a lot of a season of Gundam in like 2 hours. And
exactly,
it felt very like crisp. And like it just kept going and kept moving. But the pacing in some instances made me think, okay, I feel like there was more here that I didn't exactly get.
Right.
Which makes me think that I'm going to get it later, but now I'm thinking with everything that you said at the beginning of when we started talking, that I just might not.
I think you're going to get it. I think it feels, how should I put this? It feels like in this version, you have to be paying a little closer attention.
Yes, felt that way.
Where in the original, it's like they're going to give you a little more time. They're not going to spell it out for you, but they're not going to make it super ambiguous.
Yep. I found it a little difficult sometimes to kind of pay attention because some things were kind of happening very quickly. I felt like it was, it really did feel like, I didn't even know at the time, but it did really feel like a very like condensed and just like smushed together bunch of episodes, because I really thought this was like episode one, episode two, episode three, and giving them all in full just in a row.
Yeah, no,
and I just didn't think Gundam was that long, I guess,
which is why
I was like, oh, 2 hours. But it really felt like, okay, battle, battle again, battle. Amuro, wake the fuck up. There's another battle. So like it was very, very like go. Yeah. In some
Char,
cases,
let's find out why you're sexy and mysterious.
Yes, and then I was actually just very happy when they took some time, like a nice 20-minute, 15-minute interval to like do an episode or like a piece of
a
the
section,
movie when Amuro goes to Earth and like visits his mom.
Oh, that was great.
I was like, thank God there's not like a space battle right now. Like, there's just been so many space battles.
They did want to drive home the point, and also like they're like, hey, we spent a lot of money on these space battles. We're gonna show you everything.
I mean, yeah, it's nice. I'm glad that they did. But man, I was like, I need some downtime. I need a beach. I can't believe I said this. I need a beach episode right now.
I actually, it's funny because I remember when I saw a couple of them on the beach. I'm like, oh fuck, we're getting a beach episode
Is this happening?
Yes. Yeah. But that little section was great with Amuro finding his mom, who for some reason just refused to go to space with him and his dad. She's
I just don't like space. And
I didn't see this far in the original series, so I don't really know what was going on there. Mm-hmm. Unless she's just a bitch and is like, no, I'm going to leave. I'm staying behind. Goodbye, son.
Yeah, I'll see you never again, my child.
Maybe. And then so Amuro shows up, which is pretty cool how they do it, though. He shows up, and she's really happy, but she's like, also, oh, you need to hide that fighter, by the way, because the Zeon forces, like, check on us every day to make sure we're not, like, hiding any Federation guys.
Yeah.
And he's like, oopsies.
Yep, and he, like, literally puts a bush over it.
Just a bush! He puts it next to some trees, and he puts a bush on it. It's like,
it's
okay,
so
Amuro.
Funny.
You're clearly a technological whiz kid, but you know how to hide something. Put Bush on it.
Yeah, put Bush. You just smash cut to the movie. And you just see posters of George Bush covering. Yeah,
exactly. It's like, wait a minute.
Wait a minute, Amuro. What did you do to the ship? I covered it in Bush.
It's not 2004.
It's UC 2004.
It's UC 79 at this time. We have not hit UC 80 yet.
No Bush gore yet.
No Bush gore in this timeline.
No.
We're just happy that like people are not dying at the moment.
It's just that there was Bush and then there was gore because Amuro killed somebody.
He did, but I love that scene where he was originally hiding in like the refugee kind of like a clinic, not really hospital because it wasn't that developed.
Mm-hmm.
He was under a sheet. And while under the sheet, he just took his gun out of his holster and shot one of the Zeon soldiers.
Yes.
Like through the sheet because he thought the Zeon soldier was about to start killing people. So Amuro kills one of them. The other one starts running away. Amuro tries to shoot him down, but he flees, presumably to tell Zeon, like, oh, yeah, some Fetty guy just. Because Fetty is actually a slang term used in the dub a lot for Zeon guys describing Federation soldiers.
Yep.
And oh, yeah. Yes, we'll talk about that in dub for a different thing we watched. And presumably he's going to tell him that. And everyone's like, oh, you just made promise for us, Amuro. And he's got blood in his eyes still. His mom starts crying like, oh, my God, this is his father's influence. And he's like, hey, we're like at war here. How am I the bad guy?
Yeah, but it's really interesting to think about that because like not long ago in our timeline that we've had in this movie, Amuro just like kind of got in a robot and then was forced to go to war and like use it as a war machine to kill people.
Yes.
That he doesn't know. And he thinks it's kind of ethically immoral, but they're making him do it anyways.
But by the end of this film, he's very cool with the idea.
He is. He's gotten very used to it. He's gotten very comfortable. He's like sweating in the robot less. But this scene was really interesting because it was all about like him kind of, quote, becoming a man in a way. And becoming a man in his mother's eyes is not a good thing because it means that he's just going to go to war and
kill bloodthirsty
a bunch of people. And she's like, this is not good. And he's like, this is who I am now, Mom. I'm sorry. I kill people.
The moral message there was really kind of fascinating. If not, I don't know if it was incidentally confusing or intentionally confusing. I don't know.
Yeah, it definitely like read of... the classic son goes to war story and then comes home and is a completely different person. And like, you know, the parents can't recognize them anymore.
Yes.
Like, it was very much that sort of thing. And I thought it was great. I loved it very well. And I was very surprised with that.
And I just love because you're getting a lot of writing at the time. It's like Amuro's just like, yep, I got to do this now.
Yep.
It's like, what? No. It's like, yep. Mm-hmm. Sorry.
Yeah. Another relationship I was kind of confused about.
Yes.
And maybe you could help me out with. Was the relationship between Char and what was his name? With the G? With the
Garma?
Garma.
Yeah.
Their relationship was very fascinating because Char is a like kind of lieutenant, right, for Zeon.
Yes.
And Garma is the son of the head of Zeon.
Yes.
One of the many children of the head of Zeon.
Yeah, he's of the Zabi family.
And their relationship was very interesting because Char ended up getting him killed, kind of.
Yes.
Right. And I was wondering, maybe they reveal it in a later time, but I was like, why did he do that?
It was very much intentional. It was a betrayal.
Yes. Oh, yeah. I knew it was intentional and a betrayal, but like, why?
Oh, yeah. No, they intentionally didn't tell us yet.
Okay. They intentionally did. Okay. I just wanted to make sure that like that wasn't supposed to happen, but didn't happen. So
Cool. It's gonna be revealed later in the series exactly why.
Okay, fantastic. That's because Char was a very interesting character in this whole thing. Because
love Char.
He's Zeon, but like a weird kind of like double agent, but not a double agent, but also like an anti-hero sort of figure. I dug it.
He's one of the most popular anime characters of all time, basically.
Okay,
his fame and notoriety could be compared to something like a Vader in terms of recognition.
Okay, I see.
Like he's that popular of a villain. People use Star Wars a lot because they like to compare Char's popularity to like that of Vader. It's because like people could point and know who it is, and they like to compare Zaku's to having the same cultural impact as a stormtrooper would over here. Where even if you don't know exactly anything about Star Wars, you could say that's from Star Wars, or like you can see a Zaku and go, oh, that's from Gundam.
That's a Gundam thing. Yeah,
mm-hmm. Exactly. So that's kind of like the scope of what we're dealing with here and how crazy popular and influential this series is.
Wow.
Yeah, so cool. I really would love to keep talking about the Garma and Char relationship. I'm not going to because I was very happy They addressed it here in the movie and the TV show as well as how they met. They met in a military academy.
Right.
Mm-hmm. One of the episodes of Gundam Origins, the OVA series, was just their entire time at that academy.
Ooh.
So you see a lot of their relationship done, like, you know, 30 something years later.
Wow.
Someone wrote a novel. It might have been actually Tomino himself who wrote a prequel novel. I'm not certain, but I've seen that entire relationship explored. So I love when adaptations take something from the original, just a little thing, and go, we can expand on that greatly.
Yeah. Yeah. It's really nice to see that.
So yeah, it's going to come up a lot. What the hell Char is doing. And it's deliberate. That's why I was a little upset the whole like thing with him and his sister wasn't presumably his sister, like wasn't fully kind of given the same room, because like that gives the audience, because the original gave audience more of like a predilection to think something's up with him.
Yeah, right.
This version is kind of like, what?
Yeah, because it nothing really put off any alarm bells before he kind of betrayed Garma in this movie for me.
Exactly.
It was just kind of like he did it, and I was like, huh? You know,
exactly.
It just kind of happened, and I didn't know what to do about it. But there was also an interesting relationship here that I'm glad they took the time to explore, which was Garma and his kind of girlfriend / fiance.
Yes.
Who he was like, I'm going to marry you as soon as I'm done with this battle. The second he said that, I was like, bro, gonna die.
Exactly. Like,
there ain't going to be no marriage.
I love how it's been revisited several times later, because you can see shows that indirectly got influenced from that, like fucking to the example of like Gurren Lagann, where it's just like, that's how I knew that fucking guy was dead.
Yeah, Kamina.
Oh yeah, he's just so dead.
Yeah, he's like, after this, everything's gonna be okay. Dies.
It's not gonna be okay.
And you will be dead. Yeah.
Oh my god.
Try wearing those sunglasses when you're dead, punk.
That's great. Yeah, so that at the very end of the movie, I was kind of figured out where they're trying to go with this. But then we got, we bring in some more Zeon forces.
Right.
And they bring out, I forget the actual name, because it's not technically a Zaku, the blue one.
Yeah, they got a blue Zaku.
It's an upgraded version.
Yes, yes.
I think it's called a Jeff or something.
I really enjoyed that kind of distinction between the important kind of Zeon generals have like a different colored Zaku.
Yes,
like the regular ones are the green, right? And like Char's is red Zaku.
Yep,
and this guy's got blue Zaku.
Yes. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And the blue, basically, the red one's a faster version of the Zaku, while the blue one's a stronger version. Mm-hmm. Not faster, mm-hmm. but stronger.
Mm-hmm.
Which is really cool that they have different abilities based on their color.
Mm-hmm. When he came out with all the other green Zakus and he was the blue Zakus, I was like, you know, if he was green, he would die. But
exactly. If I were green, I would die. I would die.
But that was a pretty cool fight, though. He had some pretty cool abilities, and he like was able to. It was pretty. Guess, he beat up Amuro pretty bad.
One thing
bad.
We should talk about, because on this podcast, this is the furthest back we've gone in anime history. Because while this movie came out in 81, it was originally animated in 79.
That's
true. This is our first bit of 70s anime here. What did you think seeing it? Because it looks 70s anime is a very distinct style.
Yeah,
because they're still figuring everything out. When you're watching it, what were you thinking? Like, oh, this is weird, or what?
You know,
what your head?
I think I was shocked because it looked kind of good. I think I wasn't expecting much. I didn't know the year for it going into it, but that makes sense. Like late 70s, like 79 production time, because it kind of had a lot of the makings of like an early 80s anime,
right?
But it didn't exactly nail it. I think where it really, really, really struggled was the motion part.
Yes.
All the motion was a little clunky.
Yes.
Which, I mean, I didn't exactly subtract points for any of that, because I was like, you know, it's like, it's the 70s.
It was developed in the late 70s.
How much can you do? I mean, every show in the 70s couldn't be girlfriend now.
Well, of course. Yeah. Only one show can be girlfriend. Ugh.
Ew. But yeah,
can't wait to watch the rest.
I honestly didn't harp on the art that much, but I did think like they did some pretty creative stuff, and it really felt like that they did what they could in terms of like explosions and effects and doing the blue Zaku instead of drawing up a whole new robot.
Yeah.
You know, I felt like they really, really kind of made use of what they had and the tools that they had available and did it quite well.
Getting most bang for their buck, maybe?
Yeah. At no point was I like, this looks shitty. I was just like, oh, this is old.
Yes.
And it's kind of like a piece of art from its time.
Well, the funniest thing is, in one episode in particular, we wouldn't have seen this plot point yet. I don't think so. Mm-hmm. Or maybe, well, we're never going to see it again because one episode, I forget what episode originally was in the series. I say 43 very deliberately because if you get any DVD of Gundam now, there's only going to be 42 episodes on it.
Oh.
Because one of the episodes was so, in Tomino's mind, so badly animated, he forbid it from ever being released again. So God. If you go on Netflix now, whoa, there's a random, like, very, very recent, like, 30, 40-minute Gundam thing. Wow. It's a remake of that episode.
What? That's crazy.
So he said, no, we're remaking this. Because, like, I don't know if it actually had any pivotal plot details in there. I don't know too much about
wow.
it. But he basically forbid that episode from ever being seen and said, here it is, like, several decades later.
Wow. That's pretty hilarious.
I mean, it's also really cool on everyone's part. It's like, oh, you didn't like it, Tomino? Cool. We'll just never show it again. It's like,
that's great. I really like the amount of like perfectionism that he puts into his work. I mean,
it's a lot of effort. Yeah.
Yeah. It's pretty clear to see. I will say that one thing that I just remembered about kind of the art and the animation was that I did notice, even I would have expected this if it was an English dub, but since I was so like into the, it was all Japanese. Something that I didn't exactly expect was the amount of dropped lines there were in terms of like the speaking, because
the lip flaps just not really doing it.
And there were some times where like the lips would flap for like half the sentence, and then the rest of the sentence would just have a straight face associated with it. So yes. I was like, okay, there are some like rough around the edges pieces yes. to this, yes. and I understand.
That's a big thing with older anime in general. You see it all the time, even mm-hmm. like. It's so funny because people like love to rip on Speed Racer,
the original
English dub, for adding a lot of "oh"
of
in
course.
There. But mm-hmm. if you watch the original Japanese, it doesn't sync up all the time itself.
No. And that's I was kind of surprised about that. I was like, wow, even the Japanese version didn't sync up all the way sometimes.
Yeah, like that was just a weird thing that was kind of accepted in anime for a while.
Yeah, I mean, they just didn't have the technology, I guess, to like make it
or like they were
as exact as possible.
Yeah, or just producing it in random intervals where they would
right.
maybe animate something first, then come up with a dialogue later.
Right, exactly.
Or they would edit the dialogue, and now lip flaps didn't match anymore.
It must have been 100 things. So hard to make this. It's kind of my outlook on it. Is like this is. Must have been really difficult to like put together.
And yeah, especially when you look at some of the details going on here with like white base. In particular. A lot of the spacecraft involved, just even the mobile suits themselves, a lot of effort had to go into this thing.
Yeah, it really did. And I got to say, it looked pretty good.
Yeah, exactly. For 79 especially, it looked great. And
I wasn't mad about
it. And there's still a charm now to it, like seeing like the imperfections and now where anime now is getting so good where it's kind of numbing.
Yeah, no, for real. It kind of did feel a lot more like raw and drawn, which I really enjoyed.
Yeah.
And we've said this multiple times on this podcast, but when the story is good and when I'm invested in the plot, I could honestly care less about the animation sometimes.
Of course. Yeah, yeah.
And this, like, was a prime example of that. And I thought, like, the story was actually incredible and actually very, very good. And I was also surprised that it was that good.
And also, I also think about the cool world building we got here. Because even though it was condensed, we still understand, like, oh, the Earth Federation's a thing. It's a big,
right.
Big government. And there's these colonies up there, sides, that are rebelling. And we even saw kind of how they worked with people like the Zaku's infiltrating the outside of the colonies.
Yeah.
So you got a lot of cool shit like that. And you're like, okay, I understand this wacky space world we're in.
Yes. And it was pretty cool. So, yeah, all in all, I mean, what are your final thoughts if you had to give them on this? Did you love it? And what did you think about this, I guess, finally compared to the episodes that you have watched?
I can see exactly what Tomino wanted to cut. And I'm sure some context and some little things are lost in that translation as well. There's always going to be a sacrifice when you trim hours off an entity.
Sure.
But everything they cut really tightened up the narrative.
Mm.
The compilation film was an interesting thing because they probably could have done six compilation films at like an hour and a half, an hour a piece,
mm-hmm.
instead of three ones that are like 2 hours and change.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's like once or twice I'm like, okay, this could have been two separate things.
Yeah, it's long.
So it's long, but
it is pretty long.
So yeah, it's a little on the clunky side, but
I did not watch it in one go. I will tell you that much.
Gotcha.
I watched it in about five or six times. Five or six sections. I just kept kind of coming back to it every other day.
That's the weirdest thing here because this wasn't envisioned as a movie. Mm-hmm. They cobbled together a movie based on a TV show.
Yes.
Which is super fascinating. So you stopping isn't, I don't think it's inherently a flag. You know what I mean? Because I think you're just catching on to the nature of what this was supposed to be.
Sure, sure.
But I think this is a very quick, convenient way for people to watch Gundam and get the story and save hours by doing so. And because, like I said, there's so much bullshit in there Tomino didn't want. He said, fuck it. It's not there anymore.
It doesn't exist anymore.
So I think this is really cool. And for me personally, I loved it because they kept all the important stuff, obviously. And I'm probably going to watch the other two films relatively soon because to get the full context on the original Gundam series. They did the same thing for the sequel, Zeta Gundam, but I don't think those are available anywhere. That one, you just have to sit down and just watch the actual show.
Okay.
But I freaking really enjoyed this. It was a quick way to get a lot of episodes of Gundam down.
Yep.
So, super fun. I love seeing Zhar and Amuro in their like original rivalry, and there's both of them being like, hey, I'm skilled. You just have a good suit, Amuro. And then Char, as the show went on, it's like, as the movie went on, Char's like, oh, fuck, he's getting better. Shit.
Yeah, that was pretty cool to see, too. Yeah.
So that's a really cool rivalry and one of the most famous in Japanese modern fiction. So I really enjoyed this. Bouncy, this is one of your only experiences with original Gundam, the UC timeline. What are your thoughts? I mean, like, coming into this, like, what the hell did you think? Because I can assume for someone who has no experience with proper Gundam.
Yeah.
Here it is.
Yeah. I mean, it definitely surpassed my expectations. I've always said that I don't think I'm a big mech guy, just in general, of, like, shows. And I guess what I mean by that is I'm not a big, like, hero mech kind of guy.
Yeah, exactly.
Because when it mechs like this, I think I prefer this greatly because things like this and things like Ava that have kind of that, like, there's always like a dark undertone a little bit. There's always the tone of like, oh, this is like a war and we're fighting a war.
Yeah, it's not just a military conflict.
Right. It's not just like you're like big hero and your robot killing everybody and we're all happy about it. Like there's some bad stuff happening here and neither side is correct. People are dying and neither side is correct.
Yeah.
And that's the cool part for me. And I think with that kind of backing everything up, if this didn't have that kind of plot direction, I would have been very, very lukewarm on this. But I think because of that and from the other Gundam that I saw, which we're going to talk about very soon.
Yep.
I am very grateful that the Gundam series, at least the ones that I've seen so far, integrate some kind of plot like that.
Yes.
Instead of like a heroic kind of over the top one versus all robot hero mentality.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah,
exactly.
Hero of the week type formula.
So I got to say, I liked it. I think this, again, kind of going back to previous criticisms, I don't feel like I could really give it the full 2 hours if I just sat there and ingested the whole thing. I really would need to take a break, I think.
Yeah, fair.
Because
that's fair.
It is kind of an onslaught, but as you said, it's a kind of a good way to get into the narrative because, I mean, if you want to kind of, if you're a big Gundam fan and you want to know what the beginning was like, this is a very convenient way to do it. And yeah, I mean, I liked it. I didn't know what I was expecting, honestly, considering that the one that I watched previously was The Witch from Mercury.
The first couple episodes, The Witch from Mercury.
Which is the newest Gundam. So
the newest Gundam. And you now you can see like,
Definitely different animals. Yes,
animals.
One was very fan servicey and another one not so much. So.
And another one was just like, oh, we don't have fans yet.
Yeah, exactly. Pulled no punches and did what they wanted to do. So...
Bouncy, if you want to do it, I would love to watch 2 and 3, maybe do an episode each on them, or do one episode on 2 and 3, just so we finish the Gundam narrative and be like, oh, so this is the series, huh?
Yeah, I'd kind of be down with that. I think I'd be down to check it out.
And also just for us, the context, like, okay, how come this lasted from 1979 to now?
Yeah, I don't know how it did that. So that'll be interesting. And I'm excited to dig into also more Gundam series.
Of course.
I guess stay tuned for next week, everybody.
Stay tuned, everybody. I'm going to pee.
Yay. Amuro, get in the fucking robot.
It's bad.
That's right, everybody. The fun is over today. Thanks so much for clicking on the episode. But the fun does not have to stop here. You can hit us up anywhere that you can find us on Instagram or TikTok at Bad Anime Pod. Or you can even email us to get in touch with us directly at badanimepod@gmail.com. If you got any opinions or you just want to send some hate mail or love mail, we'll take both. We don't care. Thanks so much for listening, everybody, and have a great day.
Simple Equations Podcast Network.